Well, hey, church, how you guys doing this morning? All right, good. I don't know about you, but when I was in elementary school, we lived in a neighborhood that had like a bunch of kids, okay? A bunch of kids our age, and we were out doing all kinds of things all summer. And I remember one of my friends, maybe my best friend as in the neighborhood as I was growing up, was this kid named Eric. And Eric lived across the street, and Eric had something that I really, really, really wanted. He had the perfect setup. He had a Sega Saturn with a giant TV in his room, okay? It was awesome, okay? It was the best ever. And where's my 90s kids at? Anybody have a Sega growing up? Okay, that's what I'm talking about. All right, there we go. All right, play some Sonic, you know, that type of thing. And I remember going to Eric's house, and we'd play Sega. We'd be, you know, it was just all fun stuff. And I remember thinking, like, dude, Eric's got it made, man. Like, he's got it. Like, he's got everything a man needs, okay? All he has to do is he could just sit on his bed in the AC, sipping on his Capri Sun. You know what I'm talking about? And he's playing Sega all day long. Like, that's the best. Like, that's the life that any, you know, that's like what I wanted so much. And it's like, he's got it. And then for him, he had a box full of games. So if he gets tired of one game, he just goes on to the next game. He gets tired of that, he just moves on. And it's like, he's just got endless amount of opportunities here with the Sega. And I remember as a kid just thinking that he has reached the top. He has reached the pinnacle of life with his Sega and his TV and his games. He has discovered the meaning of life at such a young age. I mean, what an incredible opportunity that this kid, someone should write a book about this kid and what he has. Any of you guys have a friend like that, that you remember growing up, that they had something that you like, that was awesome and you really, really, really wanted it? Back then, maybe not now, okay? Like some bike or some skateboard or something like that. We're just like, man, you are so, like, what would we think? You'd always be like, man, you are so lucky. You have that thing. You're so lucky. You can just go do this whenever you want. Man, you're so lucky. And I think for a lot of us, or what I know for a lot of us, is we all think that way, you know, as a kid, as we look at all our friends and other kids in the neighborhood and stuff like that. But we still do this today. Right? Like, how many times do you find yourself scrolling on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or whatever it might be for you, and you're just scrolling around, and you see somebody, and you see kind of like a snapshot, just a snapshot of their lives, and think to yourself, man, their life is just so much better than mine. You ever think that way? Or you think, man, I wish I had what they have. Or we think, man, if only I could have a house like that, or if only I could have a car like that, or if only I could have money like that, or if only I could have a spouse like that. All right, that's what we think. And God talks about that specifically, that feeling that we all feel inside. God calls that greed. All right, that's what it is. That's what it feels like. And greed is actually the desire for more and more and more and more and more. And it's a problem that every single one of us have, and it is not a new problem for the human race. In fact, one day, a long time ago, Jesus confronts a man in a large crowd who is just like us. And trying to set the context here. Jesus, he's on his way south, all right? He's heading south, going to Jerusalem. We've talked about this. Jesus is heading towards Jerusalem, even though he knows that he is going to be killed in a horrific way in Jerusalem, but he's heading there anyway because he is going to take care of our sin problem by paying for it himself. And so here he is, he's on his way, but his plan is not just like beeline it to Jerusalem. He's in no hurry. His plan is to stop from town to town to town and in village after village after village, and he's going to talk to as many people as he can. He's going to help as many people as he can. He's going to try to help as many people as he can find him or understand who he is. And so he's going, and one day while he's traveling, a large crowd gathered together around Jesus. Now, this was nothing new. This happened all the time. We know that wherever Jesus went, large crowds of people seemed to gather and seemed to follow him. In fact, we know that Jesus, the crowds, he couldn't even go into town anymore because the crowds got so congested. I mean, there's so many people in there. So many people wanted to see the things that Jesus was doing because Jesus was doing things that nobody had ever seen anybody do before. And everybody wanted to hear the things that Jesus was saying because he was saying things that no one had ever heard anybody say before. And so this huge crowd, all right, comes up to Jesus or starts crowding around Jesus. And Luke tells us that there was actually a crowd of many thousands. Okay, so I think a lot of us, we've been in church for a certain amount of time. What we think is like, we picture Jesus like with his crew. So there's like 13 of these guys. They're kind of like, you know, moseying around, doing their thing. Like that's kind of how we view this. No, that's not how it was at all. It was a crowd of many thousands. All right, so thousands and thousands of people come from all the surrounding villages and all the surrounding towns to come see Jesus. And there were so many that they were trampling on one another. This is like a mosh pit, you know, at the band, at the concert. You know, this is like everybody is just on top of each other trying to hear what Jesus has to say and trying to see the things that he is doing. So Jesus begins to teach. And he teaches them the same things that he has taught all the other towns. And he teaches a lot of them the same things, a lot of the stuff that we have already talked about here over our series as we've been walking through Luke together. And the first thing he says, hey, you need to watch out for religious people, which is kind of ironic because we all view Jesus as like the ultimate religious figure. And here's Jesus. He's like, yeah, religious people, I don't really get along with them. All right? He said his whole point was it's not about religion. It's actually about a relationship, completely different thing. One is on doing a bunch of good stuff. One is completely relying on what he was actually on the way to go do. And then he talks about how we don't have to be afraid, which is awesome. We don't have to fear, which is good for us, especially within our culture, because we fear a lot of stuff. Right, there's a bunch of things that we don't do because we're scared, because we're afraid. Oh, what if this happens or what could happen? All right, he says, no, no, no. You don't have to walk around in fear. Instead, you don't have to have fear. Instead, have fear in me. I'm the only one who you should fear. A healthy dose of fear in God, he's saying, because I'm the one who controls everything. I'm the one who controls your life. And then on top of that, he says, God knows you. And God cares about you. In fact, he knows you better than you know yourself. He says that he teaches the crowd this day that God knows the amount of hairs that are on your head. Like he has counted them. Like he's got a tally. All right, some of you guys, it's a little easier than others for him. But he's got that down. And then he kind of ends with, he's saying, hey, you need to put God at number one. And even when bad things happen in our life, which is what we all struggle with. And so he's going through his thing. He's talking about all these different things that we have all heard before. And right in the middle of his talk, some guy in the crowd jumps up and completely interrupts Jesus. This is what he says. He says, hey, Jesus, hey, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Hey, I got a question. Actually, that's not what he does. He doesn't have a question, all right? He's not saying, hey, Jesus, could you consider, like, talking to my brother for me? He's right over there, by the way. He's right there. Could you tell him when you have time or anything? That's not what he does. He actually commands it. He says, hey, Jesus. He's telling Jesus what to do. He's saying, Jesus, you need to tell my brother. It's messed up. All right, it's rude. It's right in front of everybody. I mean, all these thousands of people are trying to listen to what Jesus has to say, and this guy is kind of stepping out, and he's only thinking about himself and his problem, and so he tells Jesus that he needs to talk to his brother. It would be kind of like if here today, one of you guys stood up in the middle of the crowd or in the middle of my talk, and you're just like, hey, Zach, can you tell my husband to put the cap on the toothpaste back on because it's super annoying, and that's just not right. Okay? Now, all of us would feel bad for you because that's messed up, right? Like, don't be that guy, you know? Put the cap on. Come on, guys. You know? But we'd all be thinking the same thing. We'd all be like, dude, what's wrong with that person? Dude, she's crazy. That's what we'd be thinking. Like, it would be rude. We're like, that person's just got no social awareness about what is going on. Like, this is not acceptable in our society to do something like that. Same thing back then. And so this guy stands up and says, tell my annoying brother to give me my money. It's almost like he wants Jesus to play like Judge Judy, you know? It's like, hey, Jesus, let's do this. We're going to have a court here, and I want you to hear my argument. You can hear my brother's argument, but what he's doing is not fair. And so, you know, let's up the ratings here. Let's let you become judge, Jesus. I want you to judge so I can get what I think I'm owed. And so everybody's standing there, all right, the whole crowd, I mean, thousands of people are all just like, what is he going to do? It's a little awkward, and they're waiting to see how Jesus is going to respond. And so Jesus looks at the guy, and he says, friend, actually, if you translate it, this word literally means man, okay? So literally, Jesus says, man, who appointed me a judge or arbitrator over you? Why are you coming at me with this stuff, all right? Why are you coming to me about any of this? And then he says, all right, he says he told them. So who's them? It's the crowd. So first he says that specifically to the man. He says, hey, man, all right, why are you coming to me to judge between you and your brother? I'm not getting involved with all this stuff. And then he turns to the thousands in the crowd, and he says, hey, guys. He uses him as an object lesson. By the way, you don't want to be on this side of Jesus' object lessons. I'm just saying. He says, hey, guys, watch out and be on guard against all greed. What kind of greed? All greed. Why? Because one's life is not in the abundance of his possessions. That's just not what life is about. So here's this guy who wants Jesus to settle a fight with his brother, and Jesus doesn't do it. At least not the way that he's telling him to do it. Which, by the way, is just a quick reminder. Can I just throw this out there? Just because you ask God, or let's be more honest with each other. Just because sometimes we tell God, I think a lot of us, we're just like this man, to fix a problem in our life, here's a little secret, doesn't mean he has to. What? Yeah, he doesn't obey you. He doesn't have to obey you. He's not obligated to obey you. All right, so we can't get mad at him when he doesn't do what we tell him to do. All right, that's just not how it works. And so he's not obligated to obey us. In fact, what Jesus is pointing out to this man is that this guy's problem is actually not a relationship problem. It's not a financial problem. It's not even a family problem. It's a heart problem. And it's something that's going on within him. And Jesus wants to fix this guy's problem. See, I don't think I don't think God looks at us and all our issues that are going on in our life that we all got problems, right? Okay, yeah, yeah. I don't think God looks at all our problems and goes, ha, you know, like, oh, that's funny. No, I think God looks at our problems and he's just like, man, that's rough. Like this is not how the world's supposed to be. This is not how he created it to be. Remember, he created it perfect. We're the ones that came in and screwed it all up. Okay, that's what has happened. And so he doesn't look at our problems and go, man, you know, that's funny or anything like that. What he does is I think he genuinely wants to fix our problems. And I think he genuinely wants to fix this guy's problems. But Jesus goes to the heart of the issue. And the heart of the problem was a problem of the heart. And so Jesus warns him and the crowd. He says, hey, the problem, man, your issue is not that your brother is being unfair. That's not the main thing going on here. Your problem is your greed is what Jesus is saying. Right? Greed is the reason why you care so much. Greed is the reason why what your brother is doing is making you so bitter on the inside. Greed is the one that is messing up your guys' relationship. All right? It's something that we all struggle with. It's funny because every single one of us, we're all in the same boat here. Like, we all got issues and we want God to fix our problems, but we don't necessarily want God touching our heart. You know what I mean? Like the thing is, if we let him fix our hearts, then that actually ends up fixing our problems. See, we want God to fix our marriages, but not our heart. We want God to fix our relationships, but not our heart. I mean, maybe their heart, all right? Their heart, their heart's got some problems, and so God, just going to take you a little while, but I think you could do it. Like, their heart, like, you need to fix that, and then we'll be all good. All right, that'll fix our relationships. See, we want God to fix our financial problems, but not the root of the problem that's actually on the inside. But that's not what Jesus does. He doesn't give us everything that we've ever wanted. Why? Well, because that doesn't fix the real issues. That doesn't fix our real problem. Our heart issues are the source of our problems. And to illustrate that, Jesus tells a quick little story. He says, then he told them a parable. Parable is just a small story. He says, picture this, guys, picture this. And remember, he's talking to thousands of people, literally. He says, a rich man's land was very productive. Okay, so this guy, he's got a bunch of land. It's going really good. He's got a lot of crops, and they're all good. They're probably all organic, just the way you like them, okay? All right, he's got it all, it's just perfect. And so he's got all this money. And so he thought to himself, he says, hey, what should I do? What do I do with all my stuff? I got so much stuff. Since I don't have anywhere to store all my crops. He says, I'll do this. I'll just tear down my barns and I'll build bigger barns. And then I'll store all my grain and all my goods there. And then I'll be all good. And then I'll say to myself, wow, you have so many goods stored up for so many years. Just take it easy. All right, eat, drink, and enjoy yourself. Here he is. He tells the story and he's just like, that's what it is. So this guy's just like, I'm just going to live it up. I got more than I need. This guy feels like as though he has just figured out the meaning of life. And like many of us, he plans on sitting back and spending his whole life gathering. And what does that make it? What's he doing here? If you notice, everything is all about him. Everything he does is to make his life easier. Everything he does is to make his life more enjoyable. I mean, look at what the rich man does when he sees how much money he's making. I mean, look at his thought process. Let's just reread this real quick. All right, when he sees how much he's got, he says, he thought to himself, what should I do since I don't have anywhere to store my crops? I will do this. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and I'll store all my grain and my goods there. He says, then I'll say to myself, you, wow, you have so many goods stored up. You're so rich. You have more than you need for many, many years. Take it easy. Eat, drink, and enjoy you. You see a pattern here? See, everything he does, his whole life revolves around him. He's just gathering, 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 and collecting, and collecting, and collecting. And the world tells us this is how we should live. The world tells us this is what we do. I remember I've told you guys this before, I think. A few years ago, I was canceling DirecTV, okay? And if you ever try to cancel something over the phone like that before, it's kind of a pain, you know, because they're like, whoa, wait. I got this deal. We can do this for you. We can make it, and they can make it way cheaper for a little while, but then they nail you on the end, you know what I'm talking about. And so this was like that. So this guy who was like obviously not from our country, I don't think. He's probably on the other side of the world. He's like trying to convince me to not leave. And I'm like, dude, I'm leaving. Let's wrap this thing up. And I remember at one point, like he kind of gives his last ditch effort of like, okay, all right, I don't do this for many people, you know, but I'm going to do this for you. Because I really like you, Zach, and this is what I'm going to do. I am going to, he pitched me some deal, and I was just like, now, and then he says, and I remember this is like burned in my memory. He says, Zach, actually, he had an accent, so it was more like, Zach. He just said, Zach, you deserve this. And he kept saying that. He's like, Zach, and I'm like, I'm really, and he's like, no, don't, Zach, you deserve this. Zach, you deserve this. And he kept saying it over and over again until I'm like, I deserve to get out of here. Like I deserve peace, man. Let me go. But I just remember over and over again, he's just telling me I deserve it. That's what the world tells us over and over and over again. We learned that from when we were little kids. We feel like we deserve everything that we need to make us happy. We feel like we deserve everything that we want. We deserve to accomplish all of our dreams. We deserve to get that perfect job that we want. That's what the world tells us. And this guy's got it. So by the world's standards, he's doing great, man. I mean, he's got more than enough. I mean, he is living it up in retirement. He's probably playing his Sega, you know, in big TV, sipping the Capri Sun. He's got it all made, all right? Typical 90s kid type thing, all right? Isn't this the American dream? Like, isn't this what we're all working towards? Isn't this what we all want? It doesn't seem bad. See, what's scary is how reasonable and rational this man appears. That should kind of freak you out a little bit. And so Jesus, he says that, but then he says, but God said to him, you fool. Now, I don't know about you. When I die, I'm not looking forward to that day necessarily, but it's coming, okay? But when I die, the first thing I hear out of God's mouth, like I'm just saying, I don't want it to be like I get up there and God's like, man, that was dumb. You know, like I don't want to hear that. I don't want to get to heaven and God's just like, wow, you, my friend, Zach, you're a fool, okay? You're like the definition of fool. Or you get up there and he's like, wow, you really missed it. Or, wow, hey, that life that I gave you, pretty awesome, right? I'm like, yeah, that was awesome. He's like, yeah, but you wasted it all. Like, that's the thing that I don't want to hear. That's what this guy hears. And by the way, can I just point this out? He's not calling him a fool because he's rich. There's something within our culture that's like, rich people equals bad. Poor people, oh, poor them. You know, this is how we think. That is not what Jesus is saying. That's not how we should be looking at people, at things. We shouldn't be judging people based off their class or based off their money, both ways, okay? That's not what we should be doing. It's not wrong to build bigger barns. That's not his point here. It's not wrong to profit. It's not wrong to enjoy your stuff. It's not wrong to save like this guy was planning on saving. In fact, the Bible says that saving is extremely wise, that's something that should be a part of our financial, our financial life. In fact, the Bible actually gives us different things. It says, hey, this is what you should do with your money. Right? The first thing the Bible says, which is against everything that our world tells us, is we should give. That's what he says. And the percentage is actually kind of lofty, right? The Bible is like a standard. This is kind of like starting point. The Bible's like, well, you should give like 10%, right? Which means you get to keep 90%. You should give God 10%. That's something where, I mean, in my own like marriage with Kate and I, like this is something that we've been able to get to, is we give every dollar that we make, we give 10% just to the church, right? We give it away, okay? And it gives us, it's actually a freeing feeling where it's like, I want to be a part of what God's doing in my community. And so I'm going to be a part of that in several different ways, but one of the ways is I'm going to be a part of that financially, and I want to be, right? And then the Bible says, after you give, you should save a certain amount. Okay? The Bible doesn't necessarily give percentages on that or anything, but that should be something that we should be wise with our money to where we are saving. And then the third thing that we do with our money after that is we can live and enjoy off of what's left. But notice, giving comes first. It's a heart thing. See, the problem with this guy is he's not doing that. Problem is, his heart's all about making his life as comfortable as possible. And he's just like us. And he's a fool. Zach, you calling me a fool? No. God is. Not me. See, this guy completely forgets the fact that life is temporary. We don't think about that much. We don't like to think about that much. Jesus, his whole thing here is he's like, hey, you don't get it. You don't get it. Right? Tonight, he says, your life will be demanded of you, and the things that you have prepared, whose will they be? See, Jesus, he's bringing up a good point. He's saying, hey, you work, 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 work. You save, 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 save. You bask in your money. You put all your trust in that number, whatever your bank account is. And here's the deal. You don't know how long you got. Your life could end tonight. And guess what? That is okay. That is fair. That is right. Because he doesn't owe you tomorrow. He doesn't guarantee you tomorrow morning. That is all bonus. What he's saying is your life is on loan. It's on loan. And God can call in that loan whenever he wants. And so here's this guy who's like, everything is mine, 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 mine. And Jesus is like, sure, yeah, except for your life. That's not yours. You borrowed that. You didn't earn your life. I gave that to you for a purpose bigger than you, and you missed out on what life is really about. See, that's all of our tendency. We get so caught up in the world, we get so caught up in our lives, that we forget why we're here, and we ignore our purpose. And what do we do instead, right? Instead, we collect stuff. Some of us, we got good stuff. Some of us, we got lesser stuff, okay? We collect all this stuff. Think about it. If you're like me, we got so much stuff. Like, you fill up your closets with stuff, and when those are full, you fill up your basements with stuff, and when that's full, you fill up your attics with stuff, and when that's full, you fill up your garage with stuff, and if that's full, and this might be some of you, right, you got so much stuff that you can't even fit it, like, on your property. You have to go rent space at a storage unit, and then you fill that up with stuff just to have a place to put your stuff. You get what I'm saying? Like, this is what we do. All right, we have so much stuff. And here's the deal. Can I let you in like a little secret just real quick? All right, just to kind of get us to understand. When you die, which you will, like it's coming. It's coming for me. It's coming for you. We all will die. When we die, what happens to all your cool stuff? What happens to it all? Like your kids are going to do a bunch of dumb stuff with your cool stuff. Like that's what's going to happen. Like they get it all. And they're going to take all your cool stuff, and they're just going to ruin everything. Like, that's literally what they're going to do. Someday, some guy that you don't even know, he will own your golf clubs, okay? He will have them. They will be his, and he won't even truly appreciate the clubs that he now owns. You know why? Because he didn't pay much for them, and he got them on big discount. That's why. And you know what should really tick you off? Is that he will actually be better than you at golf with your own clubs, right? That should bother you. See, someday your kids are going to sell your house, your dream house, for less than it's worth just so they don't have to deal with it anymore, just to get it, like, off their plate, just so they can move on. And the next owner, you know what they're going to do? They're going to paint your room a color that if you could see it would make you want to throw up. That's just how it works, okay? They're going to change a bunch of your stuff, All right, someday all your expensive tools, yeah, they're going to be sold in a garage sale. Okay, and all your guns, they're going to be collecting dust in someone else's closet. Okay, and all your dishes in China, I don't even know what women collect, you know, like those types of things. Like no one's going to care. No one's going to care about your prized stuff. No one's going to care about your furniture. And someday, which is crazy, this should really, really, really bother you, and I hope it does, someday, a bunch of your good stuff, maybe even some of your best stuff, no one is even going to want. And you know what your kids are going to do? Your own offspring, who you birthed and you raised from like nothing to whatever they are now, and you poured all your time and energy, and you financed, you know, half their life and just all this stuff. You know what they're going to do? They're going to take some of your best stuff and they're going to throw it away. Yeah, because they don't want your stuff because they're not going to want it. See, that's what Jesus is saying. Jesus says, that's how it is. Man, that's how it is. That's life. This is reality. That's how it is with the one who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. See, Jesus is saying, gathering more and more and more stuff, that ain't what life's all about. Because you can't take it with you. It stays. You move on. The only thing that we can take with us is people. That's it. Our stuff gets sold in a garage sale. See, that's why it's so important that we invest in people. That's why it's so important that we are on the front lines investing in people. And I'm not just talking about our money. We should be using our money to invest in people. We should be using our money to help people find Jesus, that they can have hope and that they can find truth and that they can be forgiven for all the things that they've done. We should be investing our money in that way, but we should also be investing our time. That's probably our most valuable resource. And our energy. So we could take as many people with us to heaven as possible. See, it's this idea that Jesus is trying to get the people in the crowd to understand, and specifically this man, he's trying to get them to understand, no, you're thinking about you. Don't think about you. Whatever you have is a gift from God, and you should be leveraging everything that he's given you to help others find Jesus. And one small way of doing it, just a tiny portion of doing that, is investing in your church. See, if you call Grace your church home, which isn't everybody in here, if you're new, dude, we are so glad that you're here. Like, keep coming, okay? But if you call Grace your church home, you should be invested in what's going on here. You should be invested with everybody else, with helping reach people and helping make a difference in our community. That's why I'm invested in here. It's a good investment. See, we should be invested in people rather than stuff. And so Jesus says this, and I don't know, maybe he looks at his disciples at this point because they're kind of standing around like, what? You know, they're just like, maybe they're all thinking it, but probably nobody's saying it. Like, here's the deal, Jesus, if we invest in people, like, I don't know what that means, but if we invest in people rather than stuff, like, how are we going to live? Like, we need food. Like, what about, we got to have a place to stay. We need clothes. We need all this stuff. And so Jesus, he looks at them, and he says this specifically to the 12 that are around him, all right? So they're real close to him. Again, there's thousands of people here. And he says, hey, therefore I tell you, he says, don't worry about your life, man. All right, this word for worry, it also means anxiety or anxious. He's saying, don't have anxiety about your life. Don't be anxious about your life, what you will eat or about the body or what you will wear, just all these different things that we collect money to help provide for. He says, for life is just more than food and the body is more than clothing. There's more to it than that. He says, consider the ravens. And I'm guessing maybe he saw a bird flying by or something like that. He's like, hey, bird. Everybody's like, okay. He says, look at them. They don't plant or harvest. They don't have a storeroom. They don't have a barn. Yet God feeds them. Aren't you worth much more than the birds? Aren't you worth more than birds? Okay, yeah. Can any of you add one moment to the lifespan by worrying? It's interesting because we know from science that anxiety and stress and worry actually takes away from our life. It actually shortens our lifespan. It is not good for us. He says, if you then, who are not able to do even a little thing, like you're not even able to control the little things, why worry about the rest? Why worry about the big things that you can't control? It makes no sense. He says, consider how the flowers grow. Like they don't labor or spin thread. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all of his splendor was adorned like one of these. He's talking about an ancient king that lived 1,000 years before him, that Solomon, he was super rich, and so he wore all the the latest fashion. He's like, Solomon, all right, the richest king in all of Israel, he was nothing compared to a flower. If that's how God clothes the grass, which is in the field today and is thrown into the furnace tomorrow, God doesn't really care about the grass. He says, how much more will he do for you? And then he points out the issue. He's saying, sure, you know, we understand that anxiety and worry and stress, it starts, we talked about this last year, about a year ago from now, where we talked about the battle for your minds, where, yeah, it starts changing our brain chemistry when we allow it into our life, and it's not good for us. But here, what he's saying, you know what the root issue is? It's you have little faith. Your faith is so little. It's so small. And so you stress out about everything. And so you worry about everything. So you're anxious about everything. You're not trusting in me, he's saying. So don't strive and don't work towards and don't like focus all your life into what you should eat or what you should drink. And then he says, and don't be anxious. See, I don't know if you've taken a counseling class ever before, but one of the like main rules that you're not supposed to do, again, this is from our world and all this stuff, is they say, well, you're not supposed to tell someone how they should feel. All right, how they feel is how they feel. You shouldn't tell anybody how they should feel. All right, it's funny because sometimes I'll be meeting with people for counseling, and I don't consider myself like the best counselor. What I'm really good at is hearing somebody's problem saying, oh, so interesting, Jesus addressed this, and so you should just do what Jesus says. This is what he says. That's what I'm good at, all right? Since he created us and knows us better than we know ourselves and know how he knows how all this works, like better than the PhDs and, you know, I'm just saying. Anyway. But what's funny is sometimes I'll be meeting with somebody and they'll just be like, man, I just feel, you know, they got some issue and they're like, I just feel so anxious. And I'm like, oh, anxious. You have anxiety. Okay, cool. Don't. Now you should pay me like $500 because that's the best advice that you ever have. That's what Jesus says here. Don't be anxious. Done. He says, don't do it. You weren't created to have anxiety. You weren't created to worry about things. That's not how you were built. It is not good for you. Don't be worried and don't be anxious. All right. Don't look over at your bank account and trust in those numbers because those numbers can be taken away, all right, in an instant. He's saying money is, while it's a great tool, it's a terrible God. He says, but seek his kingdom first. This is what we do. He's saying, seek me first. Come to me first. Put my will in front of your will. Do what's best, and these things will be provided for you. Yeah, God might not give you every single want that you have, but he promises to give us all of our needs, and he's there for us. He says, and don't be afraid, you little flock. This is kind of funny because this is kind of like an endearing term, but it's also kind of like, man, you're dumb. Term. You get what I'm saying? Like you're a sheep. No one wants to be a sheep. I don't want to be a sheep. And so he turns to his guys. He's just like, don't be afraid, you little flock, you know? Because your father delights to give you the kingdom. He delights in it. He's like, God loves to give. He's saying God delights you in not giving you every little thing that you think that you want, but some of those things that you think you want actually wouldn't be best for you, and so it wouldn't be what you want if you only knew what that thing, you know, just all this stuff. He's saying, no. He delights in giving you the best thing, which for us is eternity with him, and he freely gives that to us when we begin a relationship with him, which probably not everybody in this room has done. But those of us who have, he says he wants to give us the best thing, eternity with him, that relationship with him that we were actually created to have from the beginning of time. That's why he made us. He said that's what he wants to give us, and it delights him. He finds joy in that. He says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. See, most people think it's the opposite. It's the other way around. It's where your heart is, then your treasure will follow. But Jesus is like, nah. Nah, your bank account will totally tell you what you worship. That's what he's saying. Jesus is saying, your bank account will totally tell you where your heart is. See, as Americans, I think it's really hard for us to recognize greed. Because not only is it like something that we're all like born with and we all struggle with, like even if we're like isolated all alone somewhere on an island, right? But it's something that our culture is just constantly pounding down on us and teaching us and celebrating over and over and over again. We all deal with this. It's the reason why we're not generous. It's the reason why we get distracted from our mission to do whatever we possibly can to reach as many people as we possibly can for Jesus. And instead, we waste our life chasing after temporary stuff that does not last, like the guy in this crowd. See, this guy, think about it. He gets an audience with Jesus. He gets an audience with God. And he completely wastes it trying to get more stuff. See, it wasn't a relationship problem that he was dealing with. It wasn't a financial problem or family problem. He had a heart problem, just like us. And we don't know how the story ends. Like, what happened to the guy? Did he walk away angry? Like, man, Jesus called me out in front of thousands. Like, that's messed up, Jesus. Or was he walk away confused? Like, am I the fool? Was he calling me a fool? Was I the fool? You know, was he doing that? Or maybe he listened to the words of this famous teacher who he didn't realize at the time was actually God of the universe talking to him. I mean, did he take the words to heart? Did he walk away with a new perspective on life? I don't know. Doesn't matter. What matters is what you do with these words. Jesus was talking to this guy in particular. He was also talking to the crowd. He's talking to his disciples. But today he's talking to us. And the question is, what are you going to do with it? And how's that going to change your heart? Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words and just greed and all this stuff. I think just on the surface, a lot of us, when we even hear the word greed, we're like, well, I don't deal with that. But no, we do. And it's in us. And it affects us. And we make decisions based off that greed and off that feeling that we've all felt so many times. And I think a lot of us, we feel it so often that we just mask it. It's not a thing to us anymore. Maybe we've even gotten so used to it that we don't feel it anymore. But God, we ask that you'd help us point that out to us, Lord, and help us to erase that from our life. It's not something that just happens overnight. But Lord, we know we can do it with your help. And God, we thank you for loving us. Thank you for caring for us and doing what you did when you're on that your way to Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. God, we thank you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right.